Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're opening up the source materials on something pretty major happening right now. The big gold debate of late 2025. If you've been following this, you saw gold hit, well, levels we've never seen before.
Absolutely unprecedented highs.
Exactly. Only to then see this really sharp, sudden pullback. It caught a lot of people off guard, I think.
It definitely did. And that volatility, that swing, is precisely why we need this deep dive today. The big question, the one everyone's asking, is this drop? Is it the start of something worse? Like, is the bull run over?
Right. Or is it just, you know, catching its breath, a pause before the next big move up?
And our analysis, looking at, well, the institutional money flows, the technical charts, it actually points pretty clearly in one direction.
Okay.
It strongly suggests this is mostly a technical adjustment, more of an intermission, really, not some fundamental break in the long-term trend.
An intermission. I like that framing. And we should probably frame that intermission against what came before it.
Definitely need that context.
I mean, before this correction started, gold had an absolutely stunning run this year. What was it, a 47% year-to-date rally? Just extraordinary.
Breathtaking, really. And honestly, after a move that explosive, that fast, some kind of cooling off, it's almost expected, isn't it?
You think so, yeah. Almost inevitable.
It really is. So let's maybe start by pinning down the technical reality. What actually happened on the charts?
Okay.
Gold went parabolic, essentially. Hit that all-time peak, $4,381 per ounce. That was back in October 2025, the absolute top.
Right.
Since then, yeah, we've seen it come off. It dropped roughly 8 to 11% from that high point.
Okay, 8 to 11%.
And as of November, it's been kind of hovering just under that $4,000 mark.
Now, an 8, maybe 11% drop.
Yeah.
That's definitely enough to, well, shake out the weak hands, as traders call them.
Oh, for sure.
So what were the immediate triggers? What specifically caused that retreat from the highs?
Well, the main triggers were almost purely technical at first, plus some immediate macro stuff kicking in.
Okay.
On the charts themselves, you had momentum indicators.
Yeah.
The RSI, the relative strength index is the big one, just flashing bright red overbought signals.
Yeah.
Really screaming it.
And for anyone listening who isn't glued to trading screens, the RSI, it's basically like a speedometer for the market, right? Measuring how fast prices are moving.
Exactly. Speed and change. And when it gets that high, when it screams overbought, it's a warning sign. It's saying, hey, this has gone too far too fast.
Okay.
And that nearly always leads to profit taking.
Mm-hmm.
You know, traders who got in lower see that signal, see the huge gains, and they decide, okay, time to cash in some chips.
Makes sense.
But it wasn't just the technicals acting alone. We also saw, sort of concurrently, this sudden jump in the U.S. dollar index.
Ah, the dollar.
Yeah. And maybe some mixed signals coming out of the Fed. Little hints that maybe, just maybe, the tightening cycle wasn't quite done yet.
Okay, hold on a second there, because that's where I kind of want to push back a bit on the purely healthy correction idea.
Okay.
If the dollar index is surging, I mean, that's a classic problem for gold prices, right?
Typically, yes, it's a headwind.
Doesn't that dollar strength maybe suggest something more fundamental, like maybe investors are actually rotating back into the dollar as a safe haven rather than this just being a technical breather for gold?
That's a really sharp point, and it's definitely part of the picture.
Yeah.
But the sources we looked at, they tend to frame that dollar move as more, let's say, temporary and tactical.
Tactical how?
Driven more by that short-term speculation about the Fed's next move.
Right.
Rather than some big long-term structural shift back to the dollar, you know?
Okay.
In fact, analysts from big places, UBS, ING, they were pretty quick to label the gold decline, even with that dollar surge happening, as a healthy technical correction. They saw it as needed consolidation, fundamentally.
So they weren't spooked by the dollar move in the same way?
Not fundamentally, no. And there's a fascinating statistical note here, too. The correction involved 3 down weeks in a row, which statistically is actually pretty rare within a strong bull market. But the analysts see it as, well, healthy, a necessary consolidation phase, not a trend reversal. It's the market sort of rebalancing.
And we should probably also remember seasonality plays a part too, doesn't it? Autumn can be a pretty volatile time for commodities generally.
Absolutely. That's a known factor. It often gets bumpier this time of year.
Okay, so if the market has maybe shaken off some of that froth, that excess speculation, where do the analysts see the floor? Where's that key technical support level where buyers might step back in?
Yeah, the consensus on support seems to be converging right around that $3,800 to $3,900 level. That zone is pretty critical now.
$3,800 to $3,900.
If the price can hold above that area, it really validates the idea that the underlying bull structure is still very much intact.
Okay, so let's follow that money. If the short-term folks, the weak hands, are selling maybe down towards that $3,900 level, who's on the other side of that trade? Who is actually buying?
Ah, now this gets really interesting. This brings us to the strong hands part of the story. And it reveals a really powerful contrast in the data.
A contrast? How so?
Well, while you saw pretty significant money flowing out of Western gold ETFs,
mm-hmm.
you know, the exchange-traded funds that a lot of shorter-term investors use.
Right. Those saw outflows.
Big time. But at the same time, official institutions, we're talking central banks here, they were still very significant, very strategic buyers. They didn't stop.
So they're basically doing the opposite of the ETF crowd, moving against that speculative flow.
Exactly. It's almost a mirror image. And we know which central banks were most active.
Who were the main players?
The big accumulators, according to the sources, are countries like China, India, Brazil, also Kazakhstan. These are the definition of strong strategic holders.
Right. They're not just trading price swings.
No way. They're not chasing momentum. They're building up national reserves for the long haul.
How aggressive was this buying? I mean, do we have actual numbers, like tonnage figures, to get a sense of the scale?
We absolutely do. And the scale, honestly, is quite staggering. These central banks collectively bought over 220 tons of gold in just Q3 of 2025.
220 tons
yeah.
in one quarter.
Yep. And get this, that buying volume was up nearly 28% compared to the previous quarter, Q2.
Wow. So they actually accelerated their buying as prices potentially dipped later in the quarter.
That's what it looks like. They see price weakness not as a reason to sell, but as a buying opportunity.
That completely flips the script, doesn't it? If speculators are selling high, central banks are using dips to load up. Why such a massive difference in behavior? What's the motivation?
It boils down to their time frame and their mandate, really. Private investors, ETF holders, they might be looking at quarterly returns, maybe short-term price moves.
Sure.
Central banks, they're thinking in terms of decades or even longer. They're buying for long-term stability. They're diversifying reserves away from, frankly, too much reliance on the U.S. dollar.
Right, the de-dollarization trend.
Exactly. And they're strengthening their national balance sheets against future macroeconomic uncertainty.
Hmm.
Gold for them is a permanent strategic asset. For many traders, it's just a vehicle for short-term gains.
So the recent volatility, the pullback, it's kind of doing the market's work by washing out the fast money.
Hmm.
But the actual physical gold is just moving. It's transferring from those speculative ETF vaults into government coffers.
That's the core narrative that the analysts are really emphasizing. They call it a clear transition from weak hands to strong hands.
Weak hands to strong hands.
And this huge, persistent demand for physical metal from these official institutions, it basically creates a very strong floor under the price. A floor that short-term speculative selling is unlikely to break through easily.
Okay, that perspective certainly makes the recent correction feel, well, less alarming. It reframes it.
Definitely.
Now, let's zoom out even further. Let's talk about the really big picture stuff, the fundamental forces that kind of propelled gold onto this massive multi-year bull run to begin with. We need to get into the macroeconomic context.
Yeah, the why behind the whole thing.
And you really can't talk about gold's long-term appeal without talking about global debt, can you?
No, that's absolutely central. It remains the sort of structural foundation for the whole gold thesis.
Yeah.
And the number itself, it's just, well, it's almost hard to believe.
What's the latest figure from the sources?
Global debt has now blown past $340
trillion. $340
trillion.
It's one of those numbers that's so big you almost can't even properly visualize it.
It's genuinely mind-boggling, the scale of leverage across the entire planet.
Right.
And yet, the link back to gold is actually quite direct, quite simple.
Mm-hmm.
When you see government debt rising relentlessly, especially things like the persistent structural deficits in the U.S., it inevitably starts to chip away at long-term confidence in fiat currencies.
Because people worry about how that debt gets paid back,
yeah,
right?
Exactly. Investors look at that mountain of debt and they start asking, can governments really manage their finances without eventually resorting to just printing more money? And that fear of currency debasement naturally drives interest towards tangible assets, things that can't just be printed out of thin air, like gold.
And this ties right into that geopolitical trend we mentioned earlier, this whole idea of de-dollarization.
It feeds directly into it. You see, emerging market central banks, they're not just buying gold as some generic inflation hedge anymore.
It's more specific than that.
Oh, yeah. They're actively, strategically seeking alternatives to the dollar because of very explicit monetary and political shifts happening globally.
What kind of shifts?
The sources specifically call out the weaponization of currency systems. That's a major driver.
Meaning using the dollar system for sanctions or political pressure?
Precisely. When the world's main reserve currency can potentially be used as a tool in geopolitical conflicts, holding large reserves of it suddenly looks riskier, doesn't it?
Yeah, it becomes a vulnerability.
So for many nations, seeking out a neutral, universally accepted store of value like gold becomes almost a vital national security policy. It's about financial sovereignty.
Okay, so gold is effectively acting like the ultimate insurance policy. It's hedging against two huge risks. One, the risk of domestic governments mismanaging their own finances, that $340 trillion debt bomb. And two, the risk of international geopolitical instability and currency wars.
You've nailed it. It's the ultimate hedge against both currency debasement at home and geopolitical uncertainty abroad. Plus, simple inflation, of course.
Right.
You know, analysts also point out this interesting divergence. Over the last decade or so, paper wealth, things like stocks, bonds, complex derivatives, it's expanded way, way faster than the actual underlying value of the real economy.
A disconnect between financial markets and reality.
Kind of. And investors are starting to notice that. They're looking for assets that have intrinsic value, things that can't just be, you know, infinitely replicated through financial engineering. Gold fits that bill perfectly.
Okay, that macro picture is pretty compelling. Let's shift gears slightly and look at some historical context, because that often gives you the best feel for where we might be in a longer cycle.
History doesn't repeat, but it often rhymes, right?
Exactly. And one of the most fascinating details I saw in the source material was this historical affordability check. It kind of suggests that even after that huge 47% run-up we saw, gold might still have quite a bit more room to run before it gets truly, like, historically expensive or exclusive for the average person.
Oh, this is a great perspective tool. I love this comparison. They looked back at the absolute peak of the last great gold mania, the 1980 bull market top.
Okay, 1980. A legendary time for gold bugs.
Absolutely. And back then, at that peak, gold ownership accounted for over 9% of the average American household's disposable income. Think about that, 9%.
Wow, it's a huge slice.
It really is. Now, compare that to today. Even after hitting that record high near $4,400 an ounce recently, gold ownership is only closer to about 6.5% of disposable income.
So 9% back in 1980, only 6.5% now, even at the recent peak.
Exactly. That difference, it suggests there's still significant capacity for more capital to flow into gold before we even get close to the kind of speculative frenzy we saw in past cycles. It's not reached that same level of saturation in portfolios.
That's a really powerful point. It suggests the bull market might still be, relatively speaking, in its earlier innings compared to history.
It could well be. And that historical view also reminds us that sharp pullbacks, like the one we just saw, are actually pretty normal, even if they feel scary in the moment.
We've seen big drops within bull markets before.
Oh, absolutely. Look back at the previous major gold cycles, the 1970s, the early 2000s, even the more recent 2020-21 cycle. It was common to see really painful corrections, sometimes exceeding 20% or even more.
20%? Wow.
Yeah. But those big drops were often followed by the next major sustained leg higher. Volatility, like we often say about gold, it's really a feature of the asset, not necessarily a bug indicating the trend is broken.
Okay, so that resilience, combined with the huge structural debt issues we talked about, that must be why the major financial institutions are still putting out some incredibly bullish forecasts, right? Even after this recent 8-11% dip.
Precisely. They see the dip as a pause, not an end.
What are some of the specific price targets they're projecting for, say, the next year or so?
Well, the consensus among the big banks and analysts remains remarkably optimistic. UBS, for example, they're projecting gold could reach somewhere between $4,200 and $4,700 per ounce in early 2026.
So potentially new highs fairly soon.
That's their base case. And then you have others taking it even further. Bank of America, Goldman Sachs, they foresee targets possibly soaring as high as $5,000 or even $5,600 an ounce down the road.
$5,000 gold. Or higher.
That's what they're modeling. Their conviction seems fundamentally rooted in two things. One, the technical support around $3,800, $3,900 holding firm. And two, the macro environment, particularly the debt situation and the de-dollarization trend, actually getting worse, not better.
Which brings us nicely, I think, to the main takeaway for you, the listener, from this whole deep dive.
Yeah, what's the actionable insight here?
By really understanding these specific forces at play, You know, the technical profit taking, the strategic buying by central banks, and that overwhelming global debt backdrop, suddenly the market's recent volatility starts to make a lot more sense, doesn't it? It becomes explainable and hopefully more approachable.
Yeah, it stops feeling like just random scary noise. You can see the mechanics behind it. It starts looking more like, well, predictable market behavior, given the circumstances.
Right. You learn to maybe look past the frantic headlines about day-to-day price swings and focus instead on the bigger signals, the shifts in trading volume, who's buying versus who's selling, those institutional flows, and that underlying macro landscape that isn't changing overnight.
Exactly. You focus on the signal, not the noise.
So let's circle right back to where we started. That core question.
Yeah.
Is this pullback the end of the gold bull market?
Based on this deep dive, based on the sources, the answer seems to be a pretty confident no. The evidence strongly suggests this latest pullback is, just like those analysts said, a statistically and historically normal pause, an intermission, not a final curtain call.
Okay.
The durable underlying demand from those strong hands, the central banks, that seems to be the primary force providing support and likely driving the next move higher. Whenever that comes.
So for you, the listener, maybe an informed investor, this knowledge is genuinely useful, right?
Right.
It helps you interpret the market signals more effectively.
It absolutely should. It lets you look beyond the short-term jitters and focus squarely on that bigger context. The persistent global debt, the strategic moves by major global institutions. It gives you a framework.
Which leaves us with one final, maybe provocative thought to mull over.
Okay, let's hear it.
Given those really high analyst forecasts we mentioned, $5,000 plus, and given the sheer alarming persistence of that $340 trillion global debt number, how might the entire future of political and financial stability actually start to hinge on this changing role of gold as more and more national reserves strategically shift away from the traditional dollar system? What does that really mean? What's the ultimate geopolitical endgame if the world's most powerful financial institutions are signaling through their buying maybe a slow loss of faith in the paper system itself?
That's a huge question. It suggests the gold price might become less about just inflation and more a direct measure of geopolitical stress and trust in the entire fiat system.
A barometer of something much bigger.
Exactly. And that in itself is a really profound thing to watch in the years ahead.